Good morning, I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. A North Kingstown woman finds herself at the vortex of one of the most intensive criminal investigations in American history. Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick has the latest on Catherine Russell and her connection to the Boston Marathon bombing investigation.
3 weeks ago, she was an anonymous home health aide, working 70 to 80 hours a week to feed and shelter her husband and baby daughter. Now, Catherine Russell, by virtue of being the widow of Boston Marathon bombing suspect Tamerlan Tsarnaev, is being hunted by the news media and shadowed by federal investigators. There were conflicting reports over the weekend on whether Russell is still cooperating. The New York Times reported she has stopped talking. Her attorney, Amato DeLuca, told the Providence Journal that's not true. If she is still talking, investigators undoubtedly want to know what, if anything, she knew about the bombings in advance. And if she didn't, why she didn't. CNN has reported the bombs were made in the couple's Cambridge apartment. Investigators may also want to know how her husband explained away the purchase of 3 pressure cookers. Russell's attorney has said she knew nothing in advance of the Boston Marathon bombings or of her husband's apparent radicalization. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
The Rhode Island State Archives is hosting a special exhibit this month to celebrate the 170th anniversary of the first state constitution. Among the documents on display is the official record of the state constitution, which gave men of color the right to vote for the first time. Suffrage was also extended beyond landowners to persons who resided in the state at least 2 years and who could pay $1 in lieu of property taxes. Secretary of State Ralph Mollis says the goal of the exhibit is to heighten public awareness of the existence of the state archives.
That we have this place where these incredible documents are available for them to see anytime. The second is the history of our state and how Rhode Island really is the first among equals, and when it comes to getting religious freedom and declaring our independence and putting together the freedoms that we so take for granted today.
The archives are located at 337 Westminster Street in downtown Providence. The exhibit will be open every weekday in May. Retired NBA great, best-selling author, and filmmaker Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was the featured speaker yesterday at the New England Institute of Technology's graduation ceremony. He received a standing ovation after sharing with students 15 things he wished he'd known when he graduated from college. He encouraged them to face up to their regrets, play more video games, and indulge their curiosity. Later in a press conference, Abdul-Jabbar weighed in on whether college athletes should be paid.
I believe that college athletes deserve some type of stipend or something. They generate a lot of revenue, for the money-making sports. So I think, that would not be a bad idea. I think colleges could do more to shore that up for them, like guaranteeing them their scholarship so that even if they get injured, they get a chance to get their degrees if they want to pursue that. That's what college should be about.
Abdul-Jabbar refused to comment on several topics, including the coming out of NBA player Jason Collins and the role Islam may have played in the Boston Marathon bombings. And Oscar-nominated actress and Rhode Island native Viola Davis will be back in the state this week to receive a Making a Difference Award. She'll receive the honor Wednesday at a luncheon hosted by state tourism officials. Davis, who grew up in Central Falls, has been a passionate advocate for the arts in Rhode Island, and this year she'll be getting a star on Hollywood's Walk of Fame. Providence already has too many underused office buildings. Rhode Island Public Radio's political analyst Scott McKay has some thoughts on what can be done to prevent the Superman building from going dark.
Maybe you were driving home from a night Celtics, Bruins, or Red Sox game. Perhaps you visited friends in Boston, or were returning from summer vacation on a lake in Vermont or New Hampshire. Driving down Route 95 at the crest of a hill near the Attleboros, you see the blue beacon beckoning you home from atop the Industrial Trust Building in Providence, known universally in Rhode Island as the Superman Building. Now the landmark Jazz Age structure designed in the Art Deco style popular in the 1920s is threatened with closure. This historic skyscraper has defined the Providence skyline for generations. Now it sits empty in mocking glory of a downtown that a century ago was a gateway to the most prosperous city in the nation. No Clark Kent is slipping into a telephone booth to save this building, which was dubbed the Superman Building because it bore a striking resemblance to the Daily Planet building in the 1950s television series. This is local urban legend because this bank tower was never filmed for the Superman show. The actual Daily Planet building was the Los Angeles City Hall. No matter. To Rhode Islanders, the building, which was New England's third tallest tower when it was built in 1927, is an architectural gem and familiar part of the streetscape of an old New England city that values its past and has long been among the country's top venues for historic preservation. The loss of this building would be a psychic blow to a state and city that have been much battered recently, particularly during this stubborn recession. But we can't eat the views of this wonderful building. What happened is pretty simple. Time and the relentless churn of capitalism wait for neither people nor buildings. The last tenant, the Bank of America, has moved out. In a city with a yawning glut of office space, no tenants are lining up to move in. So now the owners of this iconic white elephant are seeking a state subsidy to renovate the building to accommodate 21st century uses, such as a mixed retail and residential condominium development. The latest plan requested by the developers would put state taxpayers on the hook for a subsidy of nearly $40 million. Developers also want a 17-year property tax stabilization deal from the hard-pressed property taxpayers of Providence. Everybody points to the 38 Studios debacle as a template. It is true that Kurt Schilling's failed video game company and its $100 million burden that Rhode Island taxpayers may shoulder has cast a pall over some state investments in the private sector. That's too bad because there are some economic initiatives that the state and the city could use to help the Superman building become commercially viable. For example, the city should move quickly on its plan to move the teeming Ripta bus depot from directly in front of this building, the belching diesel fumes and the comings and goings of bus passengers too often give this part of our capital city the feel of a third world country. No prospective tenant who confronts this as a first impression is going to look positively on the building. Governor Lincoln Chafee could help by moving some state employees in so the building will not be mothballed in the short term. And granting historic tax credits also makes some sense, even if direct taxpayer investment in the building emphatically does not. The owners, High Rock Development, took a gamble when they bought the landmark a few years back. They were betting that they could renew the long-term lease with the bank. They made the wrong gamble. Taxpayers obviously have no obligation to help the owners. Too tall to fail is not a viable economic development plan for a struggling Rhode Island economy. But maybe the developers can meet the state and city halfway. Perhaps the building owners can raise some more money in capital markets so taxpayers won't have to make a direct investment. Rhode Islanders don't want to bail out the building, but we don't want that blue light going dark and taking with it another piece of our storied cityscape.
Scott McKay's commentary can be heard every Monday on Morning Edition at 6:35 and 8:35, and again on All Things Considered at 5:45. You can also follow his political reporting and analysis at our On Politics blog at ripr.org.